Well, we're still working on the Joseph story in Genesis. There are a lot of modern applications from the Joseph story, actually too many to do in one message. So, for example, one that I'm waiting on is slavery, which should be passé. On the other hand, it's a topic of interest, and Joseph was put in the pit by his brothers and sold into slavery, and we don't have time to do much about that right this Sunday, but on another part of the Joseph story where we've already covered everything else, we'll come back to it. We can tell just this much, that slavery is very ancient, and it has nothing to do with the starting of the United States. We inherited whatever we inherited from the British Empire, and the British Empire got it from the Vikings, and the Vikings got it from the Roman Empire, and it goes all the way back to the story of Joseph, for example, in Egypt. So we'll look at that a little later on in the story. Right now, we're going to look at Genesis 39. Of course, the main message here is resistance to temptation, because Genesis 39, verse 6, is Joseph was very good at his work, and then verses 6 and following, he was proficient with work, but he had purity with Potiphar's wife. So that will be coming later, but let's look at his proficiency in work. Genesis 39, just for now, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. I'll just stop there. In the Bible, Jerusalem is always up, everywhere else is down. Doesn't matter which direction it is. Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Continuing, and Potiphar, an Egyptian officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the bodyguard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. Joseph's brothers threw him in the pit. They would have killed him, but Reuben made the suggestion, just throw him in the pit. Now, still wasn't very nice, because his brothers thought he would die of thirst. So his brothers were very, very evil. But they thought, instead of killing him themselves, they can throw him in a pit and he'll die of thirst. So along come the slave traders. Ishmaelites and Midianites, we'd say various Arab tribes. Some descended from Abraham directly through Ishmael. Some descended from Abraham through a few lines more, like the Midianites. But they all come from Abraham, but not Abraham and Isaac. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and now Joseph, that was the chosen line that would get the promised land. But here are some others that are slave traders, and they bring him up out of the pit. I did not research where that idiom comes from in English, but we, even outside the churches, will say, how do you feel today? Well, I'm in the pits. I imagine it comes from this. Which would be interesting, because it means the Bible influenced previous generations and influenced our language previously. So up out of the pits, they sell him to Potiphar. The Hebrew phrase for his job was captain of the slaughterers. Well, not anybody believes that he's the meat cutter and feeding the Pharaoh, so captain of the slaughterers would be executioner, and bodyguard fits. Potiphar was probably in charge of the executions, not that he was literally what we would call the hangman or the guillotine person, but he was probably in charge of it. We would kind of say in our language, he's like the head of the Secret Service. And it was his job to protect the Pharaoh. That same phrase is used in two other times in the New Testament. For example, 2 Kings 25:8 and 25:8, and it's Nebuchadnezzar's captain of the guard. In Jeremiah 39, it's the captain of the bodyguard. So he may not have executed people directly, but he was kind of in charge of it. We'd say Secret Service. That, I think, ties into the story later, because when Joseph will be falsely accused, Potiphar could have cut his head off, but he didn't, which I think Potiphar didn't really trust everything his wife was saying or doing. Could have hung him, could have hung Joseph, but he puts him in prison. In this case, maybe Mr. Potiphar didn't totally believe the story. So let's continue. Now, verse 2, we'll say it immediately, but part of the problem with reading verse by verse is that sometimes we miss things that are repeated, but what gets repeated, verse 2 and following, is Joseph was successful. That will be over and over again. Joseph was successful. For now, just verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph, so he became a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So here's successful here in verse 3 and 2 and 3 will both be successful. Verse 21, he will be given God's favor and successful. Verse 23, the Lord was with him and the Lord made whatever he did to prosper. So Joseph's brothers forgot him. And I don't know whether Joseph felt forgotten by God, but God had not forgotten him. And even though Joseph was mistreated, God still, put him in favor, out of the pit. Then once in the house, everything worked out in Potiphar's house. If we were doing the story of Joseph at one time, we call the title From the Pit to the Palace. He did not turn against God. He did not turn against God despite his brother's mistreatment and what's coming shortly, a false accusation. He did not turn against God, and God had not forgotten him. Applying it to ourselves, we might have bad times too. And we might have a period where there's mistreatment and unfairness. That's not unusual. We will be stronger and happier to keep in mind that God will not forget us. And the overall plan from Joseph would be, despite the mistreatment and the unfairness, God was still watching over him. God's presence and believing God superintends helps with lots of problems. We had the same subject last week with the brothers' jealousy. How do we deal with jealousy? Well, God superintends, and Psalm 75 is promotion is God's business. Not from the east, from the west, from the south comes exaltation. It comes from God who brings down one and exalts another. No need to be jealous. If there's something that happens that's wrong, God will take care of it. And if someone is exalted and they did it because they're good and God blessed them, then that's a good thing. If someone gets exalted out of evil, their time is coming. So with jealousy, thinking of God's plan and God's presence helps with jealousy. So it helps with the brothers with jealousy if they would have done that. And this subject here is unfairness, and the same solution is in unfairness. Think of God's presence and think of God's plan. So that mindset we see with Joseph would help him through his unfairness, that even though it's been mistreatment, even if for the time being it's wrong, he still thought about God, and he still thought about how God would fulfill his dreams in the end, even though not for the time being. But in the end, Joseph felt that God would take care of both unfairness with the brothers and coming unfairness with being falsely accused. it's obvious he was still very godly and that everybody else in the house knew about it, so he must have acted a certain way and said certain things about what he believed, so that there'll be another sentence in verse 3 about God giving him success, even in his mistreatment, but also others could tell it was obvious to them what Joseph believed. So let's read verses 3 through 6. His master thought the Lord was with him, and how the Lord caused all that he did to prosper in his hand. Repetition from verse 2 and verse 3, God bringing success. Verse 4 says, Joseph found favor in his sight and became his personal servant, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he owned he put in his charge. It came about from the time he made him overseer in his house and over all that he owned, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house on account of Joseph. Thus the Lord's blessings was upon all that he owned in the house and in the field. So he, Potiphar, left everything he owned in Joseph's charge and did not concern, and with him there was not any concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Before continuing, handsome in form and appearance, that would have been in the past with Sarah and Rebecca and Rachel. Here's the first, can I say, boy, age 17. So you have girls and boys. Proverbs 31, the common text on Mother's Day, is that to remember that that's not the most important thing, how we look, but it is a good thing to have if a person has it. And so the Bible had pointed that out with all these matriarchs and mothers, and now here with Joseph, but that's going to affect the story as it goes on. More I'd like to say, how he lived after he was mistreated. He worked very, very hard. He trusted God to take care of it. He did not blame God. He did not work on getting revenge. Sometimes when people have a hard time, they think, does God even exist? Or if God exists, did he lie about, say, the good things that might happen? And Joseph could have thought, God has lied about the dreams that Joseph had, about being promoted. But Joseph didn't think that. He just sort of took it day by day and took the mistreatment. And while the words are not giving, the rest of the people in the house could tell what he believed. Potiphar's staff and family could tell that Joseph was still a servant of God despite any disappointment. Despite having dreams that were not fulfilled at the time, Joseph was still serving God. And totally honest, totally hardworking. And he would just entrust all the wrongs to God and see how it worked out over time. A second thought here is the definition of success. So we've seen twice that he's success. On the other hand, it wasn't his own money, was it? And he wasn't famous yet, was he? So the definition of success is actually doing any honorable task well, or to say it again, doing any honorable task to the glory of God. So I don't think Joseph personally was getting rich from doing this, and I don't think, famous people knew him yet. That's coming. It's coming when the leader of Egypt, the Pharaoh, will put Joseph in charge of everything. I don't know whether to call him Secretary of Agriculture or Prime Minister. But personal prosperity and personal fame is coming, but not yet. Right? He's just a worker on the estate right now. And in those days, he's a worker on the plantation or worker on the farm. But God calls it successful. So success is actually doing anything that's an honorable task and doing it in a way that pleases God. And that's what was happening here with Joseph. I think we have if we're not careful, weird definitions of success. And money is still a part of it. On the other hand, now I think it's more name recognition and face recognition. It's more having a face that's known on television or a face that's known on the internet. And that's the definition of success. And people will do a lot of things to get there. Even though what they're known for is not right. Joseph was successful even before he was rich. And Joseph was successful even before everybody knew who he is. Joseph was successful doing an honorable task. That was in God's will. Even if for the time being the world did not pay attention. Now, I just mentioned what I think that a lot of people think success is. I don't think we do. And even when the world thinks about it, they don't think that a well-known face alone is successful. In the last year, there have been thoughts of what really, really matters. It's a little different than what is commonly thought in non-Christian circles. That say parents and grandparents matter, and veterans matter, and teachers matter, and farmers matter, and some of those jobs that are hard work, they don't think this matter, take them away and we'll find out they matter a lot. You know, that's not a new conclusion to us, given where we're from and the types of tasks that we do, but our world thinks success is limited to an image on a screen. And it's usually certain metro areas. And if they like you, you're successful. And if they don't like you, you're not. And that is not a true definition of success. And I think on a hard time, they know it. Joseph was successful because he was doing an honorable task well. And he was doing what God wanted for that time. And God approved him. And that would actually be the definition of success. He illustrates being faithful, even though being mistreated, and not being mad all the time. He also illustrates what we pick for our scripture reading. If a person is faithful in lesser things, God knows they will be faithful in greater things. And a person is dishonest in lesser things, they're going to be dishonest in greater things. That's kind of why we picked Luke 16:10. Even though it would have been true to pick a scripture reading that deals with temptation, that would certainly fit the story also. But he was faithful in little things, and he turned over all the mistreatment to God. Progress in work. Now we have purity with the wife, or purity with Mrs. Potiphar, and that begins in verse 7. It came about after these events that the master's wife looked with desire at Joseph, and she said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold with me, here my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. He has put all that he owns in my charge. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" I think that that verse is probably the main, verse 9 is the main lesson of the whole chapter. How could I do this great evil and sin against God? So obviously, even after his mistreatment, Joseph remained close to God. His dreams were not fulfilled, and it wasn't fair, but he stayed close to God anyway, just by using that phrase, and he entrusted all that unfairness over to God. Lean not to your own understanding, and all your ways acknowledge him. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, we could say, this doesn't make sense for the time being, but I will trust God. And his direction is going to be from the pit to the palace. One theological lesson from verse 9 is God is always the victim of sin. Joseph knew that. He was thinking of what is right. God is always the victim of sin. Now, this sin would have been against Potiphar. So there are human victims of sin, but God is always the victim of sin. Could have given specific examples, but sometimes there are political leaders that want to change laws because they're victimless crimes. There is no victimless crime. Very often, nearly always, other people are involved and are harmed from it, but God is always the victim. And every once in a while, they'll argue that drugs are a victimless crime, even though the person might die from it and all their relatives have trouble. They might argue that prostitution is a victimless crime, even though it hurts entire families and ruins a person's career. There's no such thing as really a victimless crime, but God is always the victim. And that was Joseph's attitude. Joseph was before King David, and that was King David's attitude. Psalm 51:4, against you and you only have I sinned, David said. Now, that's David and Bathsheba. Interesting contrast. This is not a sermon on David and Bathsheba, but Joseph was the opposite, was he not? Both had the same theology that God is always harmed by sin. But David is the case where he did not resist temptation. Joseph resisted temptation. Now, Joseph's mindset is very important here, and the mindset before any temptation ever came, before it was that time or that day, his mindset was, I don't want to hurt God. I want to do what is right. And that was a deep mindset before the occasion arose where there was a temptation. So God is always the victim, but inside of his emotions, Joseph said, I don't want God to be hurt, and I want God's favor. And what you have here is an application of a person, before anything comes up, who says, I want to do what is right. I want to do what is right. I want to do what gets me in a right relationship with God. I want to do what is right. Now, the opposite is true enough, and it is scriptural. The opposite is, if I do this, it's going to make a mess. That's true. And that's also biblical. Numbers 32:23, be sure your sins will find you out. Joseph knew that. That's not a main part of the story. That would be your David and Bathsheba, would it not? King David, people are going to know, and the prophet Nathan went in and said, you have caused the unsaved leaders to blaspheme, because King David, not just a personal sin, but being the king, people were just making fun of Israel and making fun of the temple and making fun of all the Old Testament Jewish religion. So the negative result is true and does give a resistance to sin. If we do something, people will find out it will be a problem, it will be a mess, maybe a little bit more on that. That's more the David story. But here at age 17, Joseph's mindset, shall we say, dedication and conviction is, I want to do what is right. And to me, that's even stronger if it happens before, the occasion where we might steal money or lie or commit fornication. It's the mindset that's a part of everyday life, I want to do what is right. And I think that's very strong. Now, verses 10 through 15, it will continue, and even so, he's going to be mistreated. Verse 10, now it came about as she spoke to Joseph day after day that he did not listen to her, to lie beside her, or to be with her. Now it happened one day that he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of his household was there inside. She caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." And he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. When she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, she called to the men of her household and said to them, "See, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed. He came out when I heard. I raised my voice and he screamed, but he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside." I think a lot of people know this story. I think there might be some that do not know this story, at least a few. It does make you wonder how things are going in following generations where they don't know much about Joseph. But one of the professional applications here is try not to be alone with people of the opposite sex that you do not know. Might not be good. And it might not be possible to avoid it. I mean, I had this week, and I talked with her in the parking lot. That's the problem with Mr. Good retiring, but I went out and talked with her in the parking lot. I did it on purpose. It must seem really, really odd. If something is really serious and longer, at least I would call Marilyn and say, "Somebody is around here." But I do know, Vice President Pence had this attitude. Boy, if I were in politics, that's the right thing. And that's the right thing to do, to have had Karen around, or at least on call real close. I just sometimes wonder how many people know this story. Don't they know? I mean, they must have heard it. You say, "Have you ever heard it?" Yes. Do you remember it day to day? Well, maybe not. It also illustrates to me, we'll give equality to women in this thing. Male and female are equal in the positive sense of all are in the image of God, but we're also equal in the negative sense of we're all quite capable of anything, and all have sinned and fallen short, and all are saved by trusting in Jesus as Savior, and after believing Him, all go in the same direction. So they're equal, but whenever a boy misbehaves, a girl has misbehaved too. You'll understand. I didn't make a list. I didn't sit here all day and make a list, but I know cases of both husbands and wives being the one to make a mess. One that comes to mind is a person that come to talk with me and said, I want to go to this church. My wife won't come. I want my wife and kids to go to this church. They will not come." This is like 25 years ago, and you don't know this person because they never came. I want, and 6 months later, she ran off with a 16-year-old. She would come in here in the middle of the week and talk. What do I do? What do I do? What do I do? So, anyway, whenever there is a serious sin, it's both. And anyway, both equal in evil and equal in good. Now let's read the last part of today, verses 16 through 20. "So she left his garment beside her until his master came home. Then she spoke to him with these words, 'The Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came into me to make sport of me. And it happened as I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled outside. And it came about when his master heard the words of the wife, which she spoke to him, saying, 'This is what your slave did to me,' that his anger burned. So Joseph's master took him and put him in jail, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the jail." Joseph was unfairly treated by his brothers. He was still loyal to God. Next, he's falsely accused by Mrs. Potiphar. He's still loyal to God. God controls life, even though the present is a time where the dreams are not fulfilled and it doesn't look very good. Let me bring in David and Bathsheba here. Can it be forgiven? Yes. Was it ever the same? No. King David was forgiven, yes. Was it ever the same? go. And better not to have done it in the first place. So God forgives. My silly little illustration, which I know I've used it in the past, it's like a board with a nail. You can pull up the nail, but there is a hole and a mark there, even if you fix it. So it's best to do what Joseph did to start with. Can it be forgiven? Yes. Does it lead to consequences? Yes. So David was forgiven and kind of blessed to a certain point, but never quite the same. Joseph had a conviction, I have to do what is right. So he did what was right. And he got mistreated for doing what is right and lied about for doing what is right. But God is going to take care of him. And as the story goes on, God is going to fulfill Joseph's dreams. And God is going to bless him. So sins can be forgiven, but they still might cause a little bit of trouble. One can decide what's the most important application. I think it's the mindset. Joseph's mindset before a trouble ever was a possibility, his mindset was, I want to do what is right. I want to be right with God. Will the choir please come?